Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to our second great big hour of Thursday Open Forum here on Catholic Answers Live. And I was a little confused last hour. I said that the wrong person was coming in. I gave the wrong name of who was coming in. So I apologize for that. But it's Patrick Madrid. So it's not going to be a letdown. Let me off the hook for the fact that I said that. Do you want to know what I did, Patrick?
Who did you say?
I said
did
Mark
you say
Brumley.
Patrick Coffin?
No, I said Mark Brumley.
Never heard of him.
I believe you have heard of Mark Brumley. I think you may have worked with him. I'm not sure about the timing, but
did.
You guys were here at Catholic Answers together.
We were. I started in early 1988, and I think Mark started either at the end of that year or early in 89, right around that time.
Man,
it was long ago.
88, I think I was in kindergarten that year.
I think you were.
Nah, I wasn't 28 in kindergarten. Or 24. I guess I was 24 at the time. I know you think that that's a possibility, Patrick, but I wasn't. I even want to go into an explanation for you why I said Mark Brumley and not
sure.
Patrick Madrid. I have to record promos for next week for the EWTN network. And so I just wrote the script of what I would say on Thursday next week, and Mark Brumley's on Thursday next week. So I came into the studio today, and I didn't travel back to the correct date. I was still a week ahead in my mind. So I have not done a proper introduction of Patrick Madrid. For those few of you who are listening who don't know Patrick, he's one of the finest apologists and evangelists in the world. He's written many, many books and is currently amazingly, the host of the Patrick Madrid Show across the nation, even far out into the Pacific Ocean on the relevant radio network. How was that for an introduction, Patrick? Did you get it all?
I love it. The only thing we might want to tell him is when I'm on. I'm on in the mornings from 9 to noon Eastern, 6 to 9 a.m. Pacific.
Right. Okay. So that sounded wrong because I come in to work with you in the morning. And you're sometimes joined by Kaylin as well.
Kaylin Green.
I hear her on there every now and then. What is her? Is she like the producer or what's her title there?
Kaylin is a she's a content producer. There are a couple different producers for the show.
Oh.
And she takes care of like ferreting out information, vetting things, getting stories ready to go.
Oh.
So she's heavy into research. That's what she does. She does a great job, too.
She's one of those. I have this feeling of renewal in the church because of people like Kaylin. There are these young people who are not burdened with all the struggles the church went through in the 70s and 80s. They don't know anything mm-hmm. about it. It's not part of their thing. I mean, if they know about it, they know it historically.
Right.
And they're so well prepared. They went, many of them, to these wonderful Catholic colleges. And don't they give you hope for the future, these young people?
Oh, definitely. Kaylin is a good example. She's mid-20s,
yeah.
Verging on late 20s. And you're right. She was a child at best during the insanity of the 70s and 80s. And so she kind of came into her adult years post all of that stuff.
Yeah. Right.
So she doesn't have a living memory of it, but I do agree with you. There is a lot of hope for the youth in the church, based on what I can see.
Yeah, we got a bunch of them here. You probably have them at Relevant Radio. We got a bunch of them here at Catholic Answers, and I feel like, wow, they're just on fire, and they're happy, joyful people like Kaylin. They're not.
Yeah.
They're not like. There's just nothing creepy about them. It fills me with hope. 888-318-7884 is our number, 888-31-TRUTH, if you want to talk with Patrick Madrid, the host of the Patrick Madrid Show mornings on the Relevant Radio Network, and the author of many things, and including many, I'm sure many people know you, Patrick, because of the Surprised by Truth books, which were your idea and your production, and they have some of the best conversion stories you will ever read.
Thank you. Well, I have to give all the credit to the men and women who contributed these chapters to these books. I had the idea, but they're the ones who really blessed the readers with stories that are so powerful, stories of God's grace. In some cases, people who were adamantly opposed to the Catholic Church And in one way or another, God reached through all of their objections and wound up bringing them home to the Catholic Church. There are four volumes in that series. And you see, I have Surprised by Truth 1, 2, and 3. And then the fourth volume that just came out a year or so ago is called Surprised by Life.
Yeah.
But they all have the same end game, which is they all wind up becoming Catholic. And it's dramatic and amazing, the stories that they tell in these books.
And I feel bad, Patrick, because I think you came right through my town with about 100 people on your last pilgrimage, which was to the California missions. And I was going to go out with a protest sign while you all drove by, and I completely forgot. And now
that would have been fun. I would have posted pictures of that on Twitter.
I know. I thought it would have been great. Like, find something to protest about Patrick Madrid and just stand out there.
Just watch my Twitter feed and you'll see plenty of people who have things don't like about Patrick Madrid.
But now where are you going next?
Well, thanks for asking. I'm leading a pilgrimage to England and Scotland. That'll be this October, from the 6th to the 15th of October. And it's not just any old pilgrimage. People might think, England, why would you go there? Well, because of the English martyrs.
Yeah.
There's a rich and magnificent history of the Catholic Church in England that took an abrupt turn about 500 years ago under King Henry VIII. So we're going to walk in the footsteps of the English martyrs. And St. John Fisher, St. Thomas More, the martyrs of Tyburn. We're going to go to all the important Catholic sites and see things that the average person doesn't even know exist in England. So that's what I'll be doing in October, the 6th through the 15th. And if I can mention how to find out more, just go to you can go to canterburypilgrimages.com/Patrick Madrid. Be sure to put the /Patrick Madrid on there. That way you'll be able to find that page. But all the info is there.
Some of the greatest saints in the history of the church there, St. John Fisher, is just one of the most magnificent people you could ever read about. So you'll see where St. John Fisher was a bishop.
Was martyred.
And where he's martyred.
Yeah, we'll go to the Tower of London. So we'll see places like the cell where St. Thomas More was held and where he did his oral defense against the divines of the Anglican Church who tried to out-argue him. We'll see sites involved with St. Edmund Campion. We'll see the place where the martyrs were killed at Tyburn, which is a suburb of London. And we'll be going all around England, so it won't just be there. We'll also be doing a lot of John Henry Newman stuff, getting up to Birmingham and seeing the oratory and where John Henry Newman lived, Blessed John Henry Newman. So I'm super excited about this, and I hope the people listening will check it out at canterburypilgrimages.com/Patrick Madrid.
Well, Patrick, this happens when you're on about a million lines full right now. We don't even have a million lines, and a million lines are full. So we'll go to calls if that's all right with you.
Okay, sounds great.
All right, open forum today on Catholic Answers Live with our guest, Patrick Madrid. We go now to Bob, somewhere out there in the universe. Bob, your question for Patrick.
Hey, guys. Good talking to you.
You too. Hey, thank you, Bob.
I'm looking at returning to the church. I guess you'd call it a revert. I guess that's the right word.
Yeah, that's a good word for it.
But there's two stumbling blocks. The first one, during the years that I left the church, I joined the Masonic Lodge, and I didn't realize until recently that there were issues with that.
Okay.
Do I need to resign?
Yes, you do. In short form, yes, you do. Catholics cannot be Masons, and there are a variety of reasons for that, including the church's canon law, which, although the word Mason or Masonry was removed in the most recent edition of canon law, the previous condemnations maintain their same force. They fall under the same canon that forbids Catholics from joining secret associations. If you would like a broad and panoramic series of reasons why Catholics cannot be Masons and why I would urge you to leave the Masons and as you come back to the Catholic Church, let me recommend two books by John Salza. The first is called Why Catholics Cannot Be Masons, and it's a short book. It'll take you all of an hour or two to read that one. And then there's a longer book by the same author, John Salza. It's called Freemasonry Unmasked. I believe both are published by our Sunday Visitor, if I'm not mistaken. And the longer book will give you a much broader history of Freemasonry. Now, John Salza himself was, at the time that he wrote these books, shortly before he be converted back to the Catholic Church, he was a 33rd degree Mason. So he had an immense amount of firsthand information, and he brings that to bear in explaining why there's a problem with Masonry and how it's incompatible with the Catholic faith. I would argue it's incompatible with Christianity as such, But since you're coming home to the Catholic Church, it has special meaning for you.
Okay. I'll definitely look into those. The second and last issue to bring up is that, of course, I am a single guy, and it seems like the church places greater value on married couples, and I would like to get married someday. I know that the Catholic Church, marriage and kids seem to go hand in hand, but I don't think that's a good idea for me to start doing that at middle age. I'm a middle-aged guy.
Well, it doesn't mean you couldn't if you found the right woman and you and she fell in love and there was an opportunity to get married. I mean, I would remain hopeful if that's the desire of your heart and ask the Lord for that. I'll give you an example in my own experience, Bob. My wife and I are very close friends with a family, a couple and their children, and the husband died of cancer a few years ago. And we've only ever known them as a married couple. But now the wife, who's a widow and has been for several years now, she has emerged from her time of grieving, and she's still young. I mean, I'm trying to think of how old she is. She's probably, I don't know, maybe 50 at the most, maybe slightly older than that, but very young and vital. And she has found a man with whom she has fallen in love, and he was never married. And he is of about the same age. So he is middle-aged, and they seem to be a wonderful couple. And I wouldn't be surprised if they wind up getting married in due time. So I know personally, even just him, a guy who thought he would never get married, and presto, God brought this woman into his life, and it could happen for you too. I would just say keep praying and asking God if that's what you desire.
Okay, that's certainly food for thought.
Right, have you joined one of the Catholic singles, like CatholicSingles.com or CatholicMatch.com, any of those? Have you looked at that?
I've looked at them online. I haven't joined yet, but I'm looked into it. I just want to make sure. I know that, you know, the Internet can be the Wild West. I just want to make sure I'm finding the right the right place.
Well, I have some personal experience with CatholicSingles.com. I mean, I should probably clarify.
Wait a second.
Yeah. My wife. No, I know the owner of CatholicSingles.com, and I've spent some time at his behest looking at some of the things that they offer to their members by way of giving him some suggestions. But it's a very good site, very well run, very well operated. I understand the same is true of Catholic Singles. I'm also aware of Ave Maria Singles. There are a variety of them out there that have good reputations, and they do a good job, to greater or lesser extents, they do a good job of kind of helping to focus your searches so that you can find a potential spouse who is going to be serious about the Catholic faith like you are. So you might want to start there. But actually, I don't think I answered your question. The Catholic Church welcomes single people of whatever age and just does whatever it can to encourage them to seek God's will for their lives. Some people are called to the single life, and it's not a vocation in the, you know, you don't typically think of a vocation to the single life. Typically, we think in terms of a vocation to the priesthood or the religious life, as well as a vocation to the married life. That would be by far the preponderance of people who have a calling from God. But there are people for whom the single life is what God plans for them, and that can be very fruitful and rich and fulfilling. It's a matter of seeking God's will, whatever your state in life might be, seeking God's will, and then do your very best by his grace to fulfill that, and you'll be happy.
That is well put. I have to ponder that.
Well, you can ponder it by just playing it back, because it goes up on Facebook right after the show's over. You can just play, or YouTube or whatnot. And Bob, we're very grateful for the call, and congratulations on your moving back towards the Catholic Church.
Definitely.
We need you, Bob.
That's awesome.
Come on back in. We also got to take a break, though, Bob, so we'll do that right now. We'll be right back with more Open Forum on Catholic Answers Live with Patrick Madrid right after this.
Catholic Answers. Our success depends on you.
Hello, my friends. Summer is here. That means summer reading. I have great news. Catholic Answers is having its first ever summer book sale in the online shop at Catholic.com. For a limited time, you can get dozens of great books offered at $10, $5, even as low as $1 a copy. Now is the time to load up on solid Catholic books for yourself, your friends, and your family. Save 50% or more on books by Jimmy Akin, Tim Staples, Rod Bennett, Gary Machuda, and a whole host of great authors. And my personal favorite, all the books in our Catholic Answers Classic series are marked down as well. Log on now and all this month to the store at shop.catholic.com and take advantage of our first ever summer sale. Log on today at shop.catholic.com.
Pope Francis reminds us that it does not take a specialized degree in theology to become a great evangelist. We're all called to evangelize. Think about the woman at the well. After she encountered Jesus, she immediately went into the city and invited others to meet him as she had. You and I can go out now and do the same. And St. Paul Street Evangelization can help. Get involved today by contacting us at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm really excited to tell you about a special limited-time offer we've got right now on subscriptions of our award-winning Catholic Answers magazine. Sign up today during our annual subscription drive, and not only can you save big bucks off the normal price, we'll give you a digital subscription of the magazine for free. Subscribe today by calling 818-487-2011 or by logging online to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com. Sign up for a one-year subscription, and we'll give you $10 off the normal price. But better yet, become a two-year subscriber, and we'll up the ante by dropping the price by $20. That's a savings of $10 to $20 plus a free digital subscription when you sign up for Catholic Answers Magazine. Act now, because this is our best offer of the year, and it's only available for a limited time. Subscribe to Catholic Answers Magazine before our annual subscription drive ends. Phone 818-487-2011. Or go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com.
Call now with your question. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Patrick Madrid is our guest. And open forum means anybody can call, first of all, whether you're Catholic or not Catholic. We're happy to take your call. You got a question that's bugging you about the Catholic Church, or maybe something you're just really excited you want to know about the Catholic Church. Anything. Give us a call. 888-318-7884. Patrick is the host of the Patrick Madrid Show mornings on the Relevant Radio Network and the author of many, many books. And I always say many, many because I actually never know if there's been another born since the last I spoke to you. But I'm going to say a number. And you tell me if I'm in the ballpark.
Okay.
And then this is going to include books you edited like Surprise by Truth.
Surprise by Truth. Okay.
27.
Bingo. Bingo bango. Yeah.
All right. Good. That means there wasn't another one since last I looked. Okay. I'm glad.
That's it. I hope that I still have a few more in me, and I think I do. I've got some ideas. But yeah, 27. I'm just wrapping up 26 and 27. Number 26 will be coming out. I think it's coming out by Christmas time this year. From Sophia Institute Press, and then the next one will come out next year.
Oh, cool, Patrick. That is really great.
Thank you.
And again, I gotta stop talking to you and keep going back to calls because the lines are full. George in Birmingham, Alabama, listening on EWTN. No surprise in Birmingham, Alabama. George, your question for Patrick Madrid.
Hey there. So I am a big fan of yours. I follow you on Twitter. But question, and I'll go quickly. One of my friends gave me a book for my birthday that he thought was a Christian book. It was called The Triumph of Christianity by Bart Ehrman was his name. And and I shouldn't have read it. But his thesis is basically Constantine created Christianity. It was the Trinity and Jesus being God were all of his inventions. And he corrupted scripture himself so that he could make Christianity to rule Rome.
To conform to his version, right?
Easier.
Okay. This is what we call in the trade, we call that junk history and junk theology. It's just simply not true. And sadly, Bart Ehrman, who is a very degreed up guy, I mean, he should know better as a scholar, at least he purports to be a scholar, but he's completely wrong in this issue. And we can come at this from several different angles. The first thing is, in order for his premise to be even remotely plausible, the Emperor Constantine, who convoked the Council of First Nicaea in the year 325 to deal primarily with the Arian heresy, he would have to have had some sort of capacity, some sort of means of collecting all the manuscripts that had by then, 300 years roughly after the time of Christ, had circulated throughout the known world, certainly throughout the Mediterranean world in the Middle East, as far away perhaps as India by that time and up into Western Europe. He would have to have had some way that he could have gathered all of those documents, doctored them, and then sent them back out again. And that's simply impossible. There's no way, humanly speaking, that he could have tampered with all of that documentary evidence such that this hypothesis that, well, the only reason we don't see it is because all the documentation was tampered with, it's just impossible. So you can dismiss it on the face of it. The second thing is we have the biblical record, which the Emperor Constantine did not tamper with, and the biblical record is replete with examples of Jesus being God. So it's foretold, for example, in Isaiah chapter 9, verse 6, which says, "For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulder, and his name will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace." So that's just one example from the Old Testament where we have prophecies that foretell Jesus and either hint at or explicitly, as this case does, say that he will be divine. And so that would extend the difficulty for Bart Ehrman even further, because that would mean he apparently missed the Jewish manuscripts that he didn't have time, or that the Emperor Constantine didn't have time to tamper with. But there are countless examples of Jesus' divinity being stated in the New Testament. So beginning with John chapter 1, verses 1 through 2, and verse 14, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, full of grace and truth. We have beheld his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father." And if there were time, we could cycle through easily a couple of dozen passages which either explicitly or implicitly state the divinity of Jesus, keeping in mind that these were books written by different authors at different times, and they were written for different audiences, so they were not all collected in one place where the Emperor Constantine could have tampered with them. So that's another problem with his theory. And then also we have the Church Fathers, who are third-party testimonies to this issue. So St. Ignatius of Antioch, for example, he wrote a series of letters on his way from Antioch to be martyred in Rome. And he was martyred there about the year 107. So he was writing these epistles at the dawn of the second century. St. John the Apostle had just died. And he's saying things like this. He says, "Ignatius, also called Theophorus, to the church at Ephesus in Asia, predestined from eternity for a glory that is lasting and unchanging, united and chosen through true suffering by the will of the Father in Jesus Christ, our God." And in another section of his letters, he says, "For our God, Jesus Christ, was conceived by Mary in accord with God's plan of the seed of David, it is true, but also of the Holy Spirit." Or he says, "To the church beloved and enlightened after the love of Jesus Christ our God, by the will of him that was willed, everything which is." So these are just three examples from one of the earliest church fathers. And were there time, and there's not, we could go through just countless examples of the early church fathers in the centuries before the Emperor Constantine, repeating this same conviction that Jesus Christ is not just Lord, he's God. He's true God and true man. And so this just blows the doors off Bart Ehrman's argument. And that's why I would suggest that you don't pay any attention to him, because he thought long and hard before coming up with the wrong answer.
Okay?
Okay. Yes, thank you. I'm sorry, I was cutting out a little. That was more than sufficient. Thanks.
Okay. I hope I didn't overkill, but this is such a vital and important doctrine. We should be passionate about this issue, and I'm certain that you are, George. But we should be passionate in defending the divinity of our Lord Jesus Christ. This is not merely, well, you know, some people believe it, some people don't believe it. We need to take a stand in the face of blasphemy when people who purport to be Christian deny the divinity of Jesus. So, yeah, let's get fired up about this and know the facts and not be afraid to share them.
Does Bart Ehrman claim to be Christian? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know anything. I've never met him, so I don't want to do a Mexican hat dance on him.
Yeah, yeah.
But his argument is ridiculous, so we can do a Mexican hat dance on that.
I'm Mexican, by the way, so I can say that.
Don't get nervous. I can say that.
Yeah, because I always remember enjoying the Mexican hat dance as a kid. But
And so on and so forth.
Yes, right. But when you do it, I'm taking from context here, it's a bad thing. Like, you people do not want a Madrid Mexican hat dance.
Don't want
them.
The Mexican hat dance,
okay,
on your argument.
Fair enough. Tim in Salem, Oregon, listening on the great modern day radio up there. You have time to share your question with Patrick, but we'll probably have to do the answer on the other side of the break. Can you do that, Tim?
Sure can. Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'll get right to it. Hey, my question has to do with the Silla confessional. Now, say, for instance, say a person commits a murder, goes to the priest, and confesses this sin to the priest. And then let's say 2 years later, the priest leaves the priesthood. And then realizing that he knows the murderer, who the murderer is, and say the murderer has gone unsolved.
Okay, Tim, that's a pretty cool... I get it. I thought you were going to do the plot of the Alfred Hitchcock movie I Confess there for a minute, but you went a different direction. Patrick Madrid is more than well-equipped to answer that question. I'm looking forward to it. We'll do that right after this, Tim, if you'll hang on here on Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, this is Bishop Jeffrey Monforton, Bishop of the Diocese of Steubenville. Make sure you keep it on Catholic Answers Live. God bless you.
Sharing the gospel with family and friends can be challenging. It's especially hard when they won't even hear you out because of all the mental roadblocks they've built up. This is Carlo Broussard, and in my new book, Prepare the Way, my aim is to help you tackle that essential first step to apologetics and evangelization, getting people to listen with an open mind. Even our best witness can bounce right off folks like these if we don't prepare the way first, breaking down barriers and leaving minds and souls free to encounter the truth. I'll give you evidence and arguments and step-by-step strategies based on asking the right questions to help them overcome their obstacles and make a straight path for the Lord. Order your copy of Prepare the Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
What difference does it make who or what you worship or what you believe? Sharing the faith used to make some people mad because it challenged their own strong beliefs. Today, it makes a lot of people yawn because they don't have strong beliefs about anything. Religious indifference is the great spiritual sickness of our age, a product of the relativism that dominates modern culture. This is Matt Nelson, and in my new book, Just Whatever, I'll take down the building blocks of religious indifference one by one. We'll look at the different kinds of indifference you tend to encounter in your friends and family members to see where they come from and why they're seductive. What you believe matters. Find out why and what to do about it in my new book, Just Whatever. You can order your copy of Just Whatever by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
Hey, listen, I want to tell you also, you guys are phenomenal. The opportunity to say these things on the air is filling the vacuum out there with very, very positive thoughts and ideas. I'm just thrilled that you guys do what you do.
Just want to say how wonderful it is to listen to you guys. You've taught me that life needs to be much more intentional. I want to thank you for your ministry.
EWTN, live truth, live Catholic.
What? Patrick Madrid is here for the groovy music? Love this music. Are you dancing right now, Patrick?
Just put a bass guitar in my hand.
Yeah, you could go with that, huh?
Yeah.
That's our own Nick Chamberlain playing with the band Nick Check and the Dead Century. And
oh, that's cool.
I love that music. And I know you are a great music aficionado. In addition to playing music yourself, you just love music.
I do. I confess. I really do. Back in the day, before I found my way into apologetics, I played bass guitar in rock and roll bands, you know, small-time rock and roll bands. I never got into the big time. I never got into the medium time. But I wanted to be the next Paul McCartney, and that's what I was aiming at. But God had other plans for me. Thank God.
That's funny, because you're like the Paul McCartney of apologetics. That's
Ooh,
what you
I like
are.
That.
You're the. That's going to be my. I'm going to introduce you that way from now on when I have to introduce you. The Paul McCartney.
I'm flattered. Thank you. That's.
Do you
like that?
Do you still have the bouffant hairdo, or did you trade that in for
Well, only on certain days.
That's a wig, huh?
It's close crop now.
So Tim in Salem, Oregon, you were asking about, say a priest hears a confession of a murder, and then a few years later is not a priest anymore, and then, go ahead, continue with your question.
And realizing that this murder has been unsolved now, and he decides to go to the police. Now, I guess my questions are, would this ex-priest testimony be admissible in the court of law, and what would the church's stance be on a situation like this?
All righty.
Okay. Two very good questions. I'm assuming, not being a lawyer, I can only assume, but my assumption is that, yes, the courts would accept that as admissible, but he would be putting himself in all kinds of worlds of hurt because the seal of the confessional is inviolable. Whether you remain in the priesthood faithfully till the end of your life or you leave the priesthood, you're still bound by that seal. So morally speaking, and in the eyes of God and the church, he would be committing a horrendous sin, and he would be violating his solemn promise never to reveal anything in the confessional. So although the state might be happy to gobble that up in a courtroom, he would be in serious, deep, deep trouble with God. And I don't know specifically the canonical penalties the church would impose, but I think it might be excommunication. So I hope that clarifies it for you. No ex-priest, no priest should ever do anything like that.
No, and I have to say, having worked inside of a diocesan chancery, and I think you did too as well, Patrick, if I remember correctly.
I never did that.
Oh, this is taken very, very seriously. I mean, there's almost nothing you can imagine taken more seriously than the seal of the confessional within the church. I mean, it would virtually end a priest's time as a priest.
Oh, not virtually. It would be over.
Yeah.
There would be a smoking crater, canonically speaking, there would be a smoking crater where
canonical
his priestly career
smoking
once stood.
Incoming canonical bombs. Duck.
Yeah. No, it's extremely serious, you're right. And for good reason. It's the internal forum, and nobody has a right to know anything in the internal forum. I mean, in general terms here, other than you and God, you're alone with God. And in the confessional, the priest is acting in the person of Christ. He is the appointed minister of Jesus in the sacrament, so it's extremely important. And it's thankfully very rare that you ever even hear about anything like that,
right?
Rare to the point that I don't know that I've ever heard any substantiated example of a priest, but that's how serious the church takes it.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, I don't think I have ever heard of one either. I have other problems, but never have heard that.
Not that one, yeah.
We have a good friend, Giuseppe, but he's over in the United Kingdom, so we got to get him on the line. Giuseppe, sorry to keep you waiting. Your question for Patrick Madrid.
Good evening, both. How are you?
Very well.
Patrick, I enjoy your talks. I watch you an awful lot on YouTube.
Thank you.
And I enjoyed your Sola Scriptura debates, especially when you were talking to some evangelical friends, I think, and you used that method of, I'll paraphrase that. You wrote something down, and you said that I have stolen money. I thought that was brilliant. So
thank you. That one was, I never said you stole money.
I never. Oh, yes. Patrick,
it was actually.
I've heard you do it too, Patrick, that I never said you stole money, and where you put the emphasis changes the meaning of that sentence.
Exactly.
And that's a wonderful example.
Thank you.
Really is. Really is. And I live near Birmingham, by the way, Patrick, and I'm going to the Oratory in Birmingham on Sunday for the
Please
High
pray
Latin
for me.
Mass.
Please pray for
yes,
me at the Latin
Mass. Yes, of course. Patrick, I'm in a moral dilemma. Basically, what it is as I've become deeper and deeper and deeper in my faith, and of course I believe so much in my heart of the Blessed Sacrament and the Eucharist. And I watch people receive communion without the reverence and taking it on the hand without a single thought. And I watched on EWTN afterwards, Father Mitch Packwood having an interview with Bishop Snyder, just reminding people how to take the Blessed Sacrament. And I really cringe when I watch this happening. And I thought, well, I get on my knees and I take it on the tongue. But how can I say stop it, but who can I talk to try and remind you? Because I keep thinking, well, if the Queen of England walked into the church, surely people would show her the proper reverence. But our Lord is the King of Kings. He died on the cross for us, and the sacrifice he made for us, and, you know, paying the correct respect and majesty that he is. Can you see what I'm trying to say?
I do, and I share your conviction about how we, you know, we should be maximalist, not minimalist, when it comes to showing respect and veneration for the Lord and the Holy Eucharist, among other things, but primarily that. So I share your deep sense of desire to do that, and I can also understand why it pains you when you see people who receive in a cavalier manner, or maybe they're not even paying attention to it. I've seen some horror stories myself. What can you do about it? My sense is probably not much if you think of, like, solving the problem by actually doing something. It seems to me that there are three spheres of activity that you and I as laymen can involve ourselves in with regard to this problem. The first and perhaps the most potent of all would be to pray, asking the Lord to help correct this problem in the church. It's a problem of longstanding, many decades old now. And there are a variety of causes for it, but prayer is always very powerful. And the second sphere of activity would be through your own good example, and let others see. As Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, he said, "You are the light of the world. Let your light shine before men." He says, let it shine before men so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. I think this is one of those good works where you, through your example, without trying to be ostentatious, but just your natural, everyday good example, radiating outward from you, that people will notice that you have a deep reverence for the Lord. That has an attractive quality to it, and it also evangelizes without words. And then the third thing would be, we have a precept in the church, as I'm sure you know, which is admonish the sinner. It's one of the, not a precept, excuse me, it's one of the spiritual works of mercy. So when it's opportune and you can find a way of gently encouraging somebody to be more respectful to our Lord in the Holy Eucharist without coming across like you're the morality police, or, you know, you're not, you know, going over to somebody and saying, "Hey, I saw you at Mass," and you know, without doing anything like that, which I seriously doubt you would do anyway. But if you have opportunities that arise where you can actually give good counsel and gently admonish somebody and encourage them more than admonish them, I think that those three things, if you spent your life active in those three areas, I think that would be very pleasing to God, and you would probably have some good results that you might only find out about when you get to heaven. You might not know in the meantime that your activity in these three areas is having a desired effect, but I believe it would have a desired effect.
As you said, by actions shows reverence. You know what I mean? Because obviously, mm-hmm. by your actions and not showing reverence, people sort of will forget what communion or the Blessed Eucharist, who he actually is. You know, mm-hmm. I was actually thinking about seeing the Archbishop. What, would that be not a good idea? Or
I'm not saying it's a bad idea, but just between you and me and however many million people are listening to us, I doubt it would really amount to much. Not because, I mean, I don't know who the Archbishop is, so I'm not saying anything about him per se, but what's he going to do? I mean, how would he translate your comment, which he probably agrees with? I hope he agrees with it. There's no really effective way that he could immediately implement that. Now, if he were to say, from now on in our archdiocese, I would like everybody to genuflect before receiving Holy Communion, that would be marvelous. If it's likely, I kind of doubt it. He may implement other measures, I'm not trying to be a wet blanket. It might be in God's providence that you're having a conversation with him could be the catalyst that might move him to do something like that. I have no earthly idea. So I'm not discounting that, and I'm not trying to discourage you from doing that. But I don't, realistically speaking, practically speaking, I wouldn't expect a lot to come from that, I guess is how I'd put it, if that makes sense.
Giuseppe, we'll have to leave it there because we got to go to a break. Thanks very much for that call. Patrick, I don't wonder if you get this. Do you, when you're speaking to people with a beautiful British accent, do you want to slip into that accent yourself and start speaking that way?
Quite.
Glad to hear it. Well, we do have to take a break, but before we do, I want to remind you, you should be a member of Radio Club. Radio Club here at Catholic Answers is completely free. We don't bug you with anything. We do send you an email every week with cool stuff in it, with behind-the-scenes videos, with letters from the hosts of the show, which, frankly, week after week, I find those letters brilliant. All kinds of cool stuff. The way you sign up for Radio Club is you go to CatholicAnswersLive.com. There's a little banner there. Just put in your email address, send us that email address, and you are our friend in Radio Club, and we're going to send you free stuff all year. And okay, now we can take a break. We'll be right back after this on Catholic Answers Live. Right then.
Your number one source for Catholic apologetics and evangelization, Catholic Answers Live.
Hey everyone, Carlo Broussard here. Can you feel the heat? Summer is upon us. Things are heating up, my friends, and that includes our first ever summer book sale and the online shop at Catholic.com. For a limited time, we've got dozens of great books offered at $10, $5, even as low as $1 a copy. So you can load up on solid Catholic books for yourself, your friends, and your family. This spectacular online event offers saving of 50% and more on books by Jimmy Akin, Tim Staples, Rod Bennett, Gary Machuda, and a whole host of esteemed authors, evangelists, and apologists, including yours truly. We've even got all of the books in our Catholic Answers Classics series marked down. Log on now and all this month to the store at shop.catholic.com and take advantage of what will be one of the most exciting sales of the summer. You know it's all good stuff because it's from the people you know and trust at Catholic Answers. Log on to shop.catholic.com and start saving today.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and you've probably heard me explain Catholicism to non-Catholic callers on the radio or engage opponents in formal public debates. I've always hoped these interactions would show people how to graciously defend and share our faith, but they're not enough. That's why I've created a weekly podcast that will help Catholics answer the toughest objections against our faith. Every episode of the Council of Trent will provide listeners with a conversation roadmap that will help them share their faith with anyone. Keep in mind that I hate boring lectures. These podcasts will contain entertaining, informative, and practical explanations of the faith, as well as interviews with the best Catholic writers and speakers in the world today. Visit TrentHornPodcast.com today to find out how you can subscribe to my new podcast. That's TrentHornPodcast.com.
Call now with your question. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm so happy to have Patrick Madrid here with us and sharing sometimes sharing the good news. That's what we try to do. And we appreciate your calls as well. If you have a question on anything at all having to do with the Catholic faith, you're welcome to call on these open forum days. And don't forget, non-Catholics as well as Catholics are welcome to call. Anybody can call. Let's go to Tony at the North Pole. I read that wrong. Northport, Florida, watching on YouTube. I knew it wasn't North Pole, Tony. What's your question for Patrick?
Hi, guys. Patrick, I really appreciate your talks. I really enjoy them. The bit about the statues, worshiping statues, is hilarious. So thank you for everything you do.
Can I tell you where that happened and when that happened?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, just a little slice of life. I was with Carl Keating. We were in suburban Chicago back around, I don't know, it seemed to me like it was around 92, somewhere in there. And we were doing barnstorming, speaking at parishes for the better part of a week. And we pulled up in front of a parish that had these statues in the front, in front of the rectory, a statue of Our Lady of Fatima, and then the three children statues. And just it just sort of rolled out. I just said to Carl, I pointed to the statues and I said, what a great religion. Not only can we worship statues, but our statues can worship statues. Because the statues of the children, the Fatima children, had their hands folded. They were kneeling in front of the bigger statue. And so Carl and I chuckled, like, that's pretty funny. And then when I introduced, because Carl was speaking that evening, I introduced him. So I was at the microphone and I told that story that had just happened an hour earlier. And the Catholics in the audience laughed. And then I realized, hey, this is actually a really good joke. So that's been in my bag of tricks ever since. And I've told that joke endlessly. And when I hear other people tell the joke, I get a smile on my face when I hear that.
That's great, Patrick. Tony, your question for Badrick?
Yeah, I was trying to frame it the best, most cogent way I could. So I guess it's kind of a two-part question. First, kind of a question about the Eucharist. I understand that Eastern Orthodox has valid apostolic succession, the seven sacraments. So when I'm driving past a church, a Catholic church, I assume that there's a consecrated Eucharist there. I bless myself. If I'm in the presence of the Eucharist, genuflect, and all of that. So my question, my first part of the question would be, if I'm passing an Eastern Orthodox church, or presumably if I'm on a pilgrimage in Greece or in Israel, and I am in a Eastern Orthodox church, I would assume, but I just want to verify, that that is Jesus Christ, and that I would adore him. So that's okay. The first part. Second part is, I've heard it phrased different ways, but that in extreme circumstances, usually how I hear it phrased, that you can actually take part in the sacraments of the Eastern Orthodox Church. What precisely does that mean? So those are okay. That's my question.
Okay, two very good questions. Well, as to the first question, I don't know for certain whether every single, say, Greek Orthodox Church has the Blessed Sacrament reposed in the tabernacle, and it would be the Eucharistic bread, not the mixing as it happens at Divine Liturgy. At Divine Liturgy, the Eastern Orthodox believers receive our Lord in Holy Communion with the Eucharistic bread and the precious blood mixed in the chalice and then spooned into their mouths. And as for, let's say, Holy Communion for those who are sick, I'm assuming that they would have Holy Communion reposed in a tabernacle, but not knowing whether or not this is customary for the typical, say, Greek Orthodox church, I don't know. If there is a tabernacle in that church and our Lord is there, then yes, it would be completely appropriate to make a sign of reverence, to make the sign of the cross, for example, to say a little prayer as you pass by. So I think the best thing would be to, if you're traveling, if you have an opportunity to stop in and see, if you see the sanctuary light and you see a tabernacle, that's your sign that our Lord is there. Now, as to the second part of your question, the church foresees situations where Catholics such as yourself, maybe because of travel or you've moved to a different country or there's something else happening where you're not able to go to Mass at a Catholic church, you are permitted by the Catholic Church to receive the sacraments in an Orthodox church. So, for example, receiving Holy Communion at their Divine Liturgy, or to go to confession. Or I think the likelihood of something like chrismation, which we call confirmation, would be a lot less likely to happen. But let's just say Holy Communion and confession. You are permitted to do that because they are valid sacraments. And you would need to have reasons for doing that. But the question would remain whether or not that Orthodox priest would allow you to do that, because sadly there is a great deal of anti-Catholic feeling in the Eastern Orthodox world, and I myself have encountered some of it before, and it might be that the priest would not allow you to, because he might say that you are not properly prepared to do that. Now, theologically speaking, and in terms of the high-level agreements between, say, the Greek Orthodox Church and the Catholic Church, it is permitted. But on an individual case-by-case basis, you might run into some resistance. So that's something to keep in mind.
Okay, Tony?
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Let's go to Rose now in Elmira, New York. Rose, you're on with Patrick Madrid. Your question, please.
Good evening. Thank you for taking my call. I befriended a couple that now has a teenage daughter about 5 years ago, and I'm finding myself constantly getting into a debate with them because they're teaching their daughter that nothing in the Bible is literal. From homosexuality to adultery, God will understand. So I'm getting very frustrated. I know I can pray, but it's very hard to debate someone who doesn't fully believe what the Bible says. So I'm wondering what you do in that case. Because
tell me,
daughter doesn't have a clue.
Right. Are you young like the daughter, or are you an adult?
No, I'm an adult, but the daughter looks up to me. But it's very hard because the parents have gone very far away from the belief.
Right. So would your conversation be with the daughter or with the parents?
Right now, I don't want to step on the parents' toes, but I'm constantly in debate. in debates with them. I would say I debate all the time with them, but I don't win because when I point something out in the Bible, it's kind of futile because they're like, yeah, it says that, but God would forgive, or God, you know, they kind of justify mm-hmm. whatever. They make up their own idea, their own interpretation.
Right. Well, there are a few things you could do. One would be to try to pin them down, to start quoting some passages where Jesus says, love your enemies, do good to those who persecute you, and say, that's probably not literal, right? Jesus didn't really mean that, did he? And they might say, oh, no, he meant that. But I thought you said that you don't take the Bible literally. So if you don't take the Bible literally, then how can you say that Jesus literally meant to love your enemies? Or Jesus in Matthew 25 said, feed the hungry, clothe the naked, give drink to the thirsty, etc. He didn't mean that literally. You know, he doesn't like literally expect you to feed poor people, does he? And they're going to say, oh, yeah, of course he does. So then what you do is you show them the inconsistency and point out that you're just saying this is literal because you happen to agree with it. But when you come across another teaching of Jesus that you don't like the ramifications of, you dismiss it as not being literal. That's purely subjective, and it's erroneous. And you can point out you have no objective basis, no objective rationale, certainly not a biblical rationale, to just capriciously say, well, this verse should be taken literally and that verse should not. Just point that out to them and just say you've constructed this sort of imaginary world. That's not what Jesus taught. It's not what the apostles taught. It's certainly not what the church has taught for the last 2,000 years. So you're deluding yourselves. Now, they may argue with you, but you need to tell them this. You're deluding yourselves. And you can say to them, and I've demonstrated it because I've proven to you by your own admission that you don't really take all of the Bible either literally or figuratively. The next thing you could do is just ask them, do you believe that Jesus is God? And hopefully they'll say yes. Then you could say, well, then as God, do you believe he has a claim on your life? Hopefully they'll say yes. If they say no, then there's an entirely different set of things that you probably should talk about. But let's assume for the moment that they say yes. Then I would say, well, if you believe that Jesus is God and you believe he has a claim on your life, then how do you explain the fact that Jesus says to you, he says, why do you say to me, Lord, Lord, but do not do the things I command you? And what did he command us? He commanded us to listen to him, to listen to his teachings. In Luke 10:16, he says to the apostles, he who listens to you, listens to me. He who rejects you, rejects me. So you can pile up pretty quickly a lot of evidence from Jesus' own lips that point out that he gave his church the authority to teach. Matthew chapter 28, verses 19 and 20, the Great Commission is where Jesus says to the apostles, go into the whole world, teach them to observe all that I have commanded you. So what you need to do is kind of, in a step-by-step way, lay out these logical premises. And the conclusion is that if you refuse to listen to the church, then don't fool yourself into thinking that you're really a follower of Jesus, because by doing so, you're refusing to listen to him. Now, this may take multiple conversations, but that would be the tack I would take just based upon the little information that you've given me.
Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Rose. Appreciate that. Do you think we can get a quick one in? I think we can get a quick question in. I think so.
Sure.
Kevin, I'm sorry to rush you, but if you can ask your question real quick, Patrick will have time to get an answer to you.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Why is it called the Second Coming when it appears that the Lord appeared in the Old Testament and as well as visited saints in the New Testament? Why is the church, when they say Christ returns, is it called the Second Coming? I know that may sound like a basic question.
Good question. Yeah, it's a term that refers to the final judgment when Christ returns in glory in the clouds with the angels coming with him as our judge. That's what it refers to. So it's a term that has a kind of very specific meaning. It doesn't exclude these other instances like personal revelations where Jesus might appear to a saint or something like that. It's not intended to exclude that, but to simply denominate it as in his first coming, Jesus was in the flesh walking the earth in his ministry. In his second coming, he will return to judge everybody.
Kevin, you did it. Thanks for asking that question so quickly. Patrick Madrid, thanks for another great hour.
Thank you, Si. Always great to be here with you. I love Catholic Answers. So pass along all my love to everybody.
I will. Thank you very much. And people can get in touch with you at patrickmadrid.com.
Yes.
And if they want to take you up on that offer to go and visit, to make a pilgrimage to all the sites of English, the English Catholic faith, they can go to CanterburyTours.com/Patrick Madrid.
CanterburyPilgrimages.com/Patrick Madrid. Thank you.
CanterburyPilgrimages.com/Patrick Madrid. Thanks again, Patrick.
Thank you, Si. God bless you.
Hey, don't forget to join us tomorrow. We're doing it again. Game show day. That's right. The brand new, as yet unnamed game show at Catholic Answers Live comes back. Jimmy Akin will be our special secret celebrity guest. See you then, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.